At 4:51 a.m., a silent figure stands over a sleeping four-year-old, his hands hovering just inches above the child's chest for several agonizing seconds before he peels back the blanket and carries the boy into the darkness. This is not a theory or a witness statement. This is the grainy, infrared reality captured by a nursery monitor on Sadler's Drive. But the most disturbing detail isn't what happened at 4:51. It is what the camera recorded 2 hours later at 6:48 a.m., when the intruder returned to that same bedroom while the first child was already lying dead in the street. And we still do not know why he didn't take the second twin. The humidity of a Texas morning usually carries the scent of damp earth and diesel, but that Saturday it feels heavy with a static charge that only comes when something is fundamentally broken. I am arriving at the scene in the Florina Mountain neighborhood of southwest Dallas, just as the crime scene tape is being unrolled, its bright yellow plastic snapping in the light wind. The street is a quiet residential stretch where the houses sit back on small, manicured lawns, a place that should be waking up to the sound of lawnmowers and barking dogs. Instead, it is silent. A jogger made the discovery around 6:45 in the morning, finding a small, unmoving shape in the middle of the street that looked at first like a discarded mannequin or a cruel prank. It is neither. As I step over the curb, the reality of the scene takes hold with a visceral sharpness that years of investigative work never truly dulls. There is a specific way the air feels when a life has been taken in a place of supposed safety. And as the first rays of sun hit the pavement, the shadow of the surrounding trees stretches long and dark across the asphalt. The victim is a child, barely out of toddlerhood, dressed in his pajamas. He is barefoot, lying on his back in a pool of drying blood that has begun to bake into the road. There are no witnesses standing by, no frantic parents screaming at the perimeter, and no immediate signs of a struggle in the street itself. It is a sterile, haunting tableau of a crime that feels as though it dropped out of a nightmare and into the waking world. We begin the methodical process of cordoning off the area, knowing that every inch of that pavement holds the story of how four-year-old Cash Gernon ended up alone in the dark. Take a moment to look at the street where you live. You lock your doors, you set your alarms, and you believe your walls are a fortress. But on this morning in Dallas, the perpetrator didn't kick in a door or smash a window. He moved like a ghost through a house filled with sleeping people, proving that sometimes the most dangerous thing in your home is the simple fact that someone knows you're inside. The preliminary investigation moves with a frantic but controlled energy as we work backward from the body to find the point of origin. Cash had been staying in a home on Sadler Ridge Drive, less than half a mile from where he was found. The house belongs to Monica Sherrod, who has been caring for Cash and his twin brother after their biological father abruptly left the residence several months prior. When we make contact at the home, the atmosphere is one of confusion that rapidly descends into horror. The household was asleep, unaware that one of the boys was missing from his bed. We are beginning a room-by-room sweep, documenting the layout and looking for any signs of forced entry. There are no shattered windows or kicked-in doors, which suggests a level of familiarity or a terrifyingly silent intruder. We interview every occupant of the house, mapping out the timeline of the previous evening. The boys were put to bed in their shared room, a space filled with the usual clutter of childhood, and the house was locked up for the night. As we comb through the neighborhood, we begin a systematic canvassing for any residential security footage that might have captured movement during the early morning hours. Neighbors are waking up to find their quiet street transformed into a massive crime scene, and the tension is palpable as the news of the child's identity begins to circulate. We establish a chronological log of every vehicle that passed through the nearby intersections, looking for a pattern or a suspicious departure. The focus remains on the hours between midnight and dawn, the window of time where the world failed to protect the boy. We find that Cash had no biological relation to the woman caring for him, adding a layer of complexity to the custodial history that we have to untangle through state records. Every lead is pursued with the knowledge that the perpetrator likely walked through the neighborhood in the dead of night, potentially carrying the victim. Now we pivot to the technical data. the cold forensic reality that digital eyes provide. Inside the bedroom, where Cash and his brother slept, a baby monitor was positioned to oversee the twin beds. When we pull the digital storage and begin reviewing the infrared footage from that night, the room is bathed in the grainy, high-contrast light of night vision. At approximately 4:51 in the morning, the door to the bedroom slowly creaks open. A young man, identified as 18-year-old Darian Brown, enters the frame. He is wearing a hoodie and a backpack, moving with a chillingly calm and deliberate pace. The footage shows him standing over the bed where Cash is sleeping, his hands hovering over the boy for several seconds, as if he is waiting for the perfect moment. There is no hesitation in his movements, only a cold, mechanical precision. He gently lifts the covers and scoops the sleeping four-year-old into his arms. Cash appears to wake up for a fleeting second, his small limbs moving as he is lifted, but he does not cry out in a way that alerts anyone else in the house. Brown then turns and exits the room, disappearing into the darkness of the hallway with the child. We watch the timestamp skip forward, and the most haunting segment of the tape occurs approximately 2 hours later. At 6:48 in the morning, the camera captures Brown returning to the room. He approaches the bed of the remaining twin brother, his hands once again reaching toward a sleeping child. However, something seems to startle him, or perhaps he changes his mind, as he hovers for a moment before abruptly turning and fleeing the room for the final time. This digital evidence provides the undeniable link between the suspect and the abduction, confirming that the attack was a targeted home invasion. Forensic analysts examine the metadata of the recording to ensure no tampering occurred, while technicians work to enhance the facial features of the intruder to match them against local databases. The clarity of the infrared light leaves no room for doubt about the identity of the man who violated the sanctuary of that home. Consider the timeline. Between 4:51 a.m. and 6:48 a.m., a child was taken, murdered, and left in the street. Yet the killer felt bold enough to return to the scene of the kidnapping while the sun was already beginning to rise. Does this suggest a psychotic break or a level of calculated predation that we rarely see? If the monitor hadn't been recording, would we have ever looked at the person who was already known to the family? The autopsy report is a harrowing document that details multiple stab wounds caused by an edged weapon, confirming that Cash was killed shortly after being taken from the house and left in the street. We are processing the backpack recovered from Brown's home. It contains tissues and a kitchen knife, both stained with biological matter that matches the victim's profile. There is a sensory disconnect here, the smell of sterile crime lab chemicals clashing with the sight of a child's blood on a common household utensil. Darian Brown lived in the general vicinity and was known to the family, though no clear motive for such a violent act against a toddler is ever established. During the discovery phase of the trial, it is revealed that Brown has a history of mental health evaluations, leading to a period where he is found incompetent to stand trial. He is sent to a state mental health facility for treatment until his competency is restored, a process that delays the final justice for several years. In 2025, the legal system finally reaches its conclusion when Brown pleads guilty to the capital murder of Cash Gernon. By entering the plea, he avoids the possibility of a death sentence and is instead sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole. The sentencing hearing is a somber affair, attended by the boy's biological mother and the caregivers who were present on the night of the abduction. The court records are closed with the finality of a life sentence, ensuring that the perpetrator will never again step foot in a residential neighborhood. Cash's twin brother is reunited with his biological mother, and the home on Sadler Ridge Drive was eventually vacated, though the memory of that morning remains etched into the history of Dallas law enforcement. The case stands as a stark documentation of a security failure and the lethal capacity of a determined intruder, leaving behind only the cold facts of the evidence and a permanent void in a family that was never meant to be broken in such a public and brutal fashion. This case leaves us with a haunting question about the nature of safety and technology. Some argue that the baby monitor failed because it didn't alert the parents in real time to the intruder's presence. Others argue that without that footage, the killer might never have been caught, leaving a predator free to strike again. So I have to ask you, in a world where your most private moments are caught on camera, is surveillance a true shield of protection? Or is it just a high-definition witness to our worst nightmares? Give me your honest take in the comments.